Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Mullins brings speed. He's trying to get aboard. The 3-2. Swing and a well-struck fly ball. Right field. Renfro's back. It is gone. This game is tied. A bullet to right center field from Cedric Mullins. And it's 1-1 in game two in the fifth.
ESPN Radio on the call, and it seems like it's so long ago, but it's really not. But Cedric Mullins was responsible for the only run the Orioles scored in the postseason last year.
The only highlight. Yeah. I mean, unless Corbin Burns, pushing, shoving, striking people out.
Yeah.
But he's gone.
Yes, he is.
Cedric's 162 games and maybe one or two playoff games from being gone.
Yeah. So Cedric Mullins, and it seemed like they were trying to phase him out, but nothing else worked. So Cedric Mullins got his opportunity again, even though they probably should have batted him higher in the lineup as things went. Alas, we bemoaned platoons at the end of last year.
They had an out-of-shape catcher they were trying to prop up.
Yeah, they were. They were doing that. And it seems like we're going to get a lot more platoons again this year, Jason. We talked yesterday about second base, and now in the outfield, yeah, Colton Cowser's probably the left fielder most days, and Cedric's the center fielder most days, but right field looks like a platoon. And what about those days when you're looking to move guys around? So we got platoons everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, look, the one guy who kind of became down the stretch the predominant right fielder they let leave for Toronto for a bunch of deferred money and about $13 million a year.
Yeah.
So you take him out of the mix, and it already looked like it was going to be more platoon than not with Santander in the mix. And you take him out of the mix, and it is what it is. The Dylan Carlson thing, I think, could he and Jorge Mateo both fit on this roster? If they do, I'm not sure then that Ramon does. I don't know about that.
You can never quit Ramon.
And I'm sure Dylan Carlson has opt-outs and stuff, so if he's got better options after spring training, I would assume he's going to be able to pursue that if the Orioles don't want to, you know, put him on their opening day roster. He's a switch hitter. I mean, could he be a poor man's Aaron Hicks? He's not going to get on base as much as Aaron Hicks. He's going to strike out a lot more than Aaron Hicks.
Just to clarify, he hits from both sides of the plate, but he doesn't do much hitting of late.
No.
No.
But yeah, I think that's insurance, further insurance for what looks to me like, I don't think they want Heston seeing a whole lot of lefties.
Michael Elias already said
they don't want O'Hearn seeing a whole lot of lefties. They don't want O'Neill seeing a whole lot of righties. They clearly last year had said in a platoon type thing down the stretch in the second half of the year. I think they'll probably play Colton Cowser a lot against lefties. I don't think it'll be great at the plate, but O'Neill, when he's healthy, can play pretty good defense. Not like he could 3 or 4 years ago before he started breaking down all over the place. But like, if you put him in the field with any regularity, that's when he tends to get hurt. Heston, we know what that is. It's below grade defense. O'Hearn in the outfield is below grade defense. And so between Colton and Mullins, I think they'll want both of them in the outfield more often than not.
Yeah.
But against lefties, one of them's probably sitting, right? Yeah. I don't think they're both in the lineup against lefties.
Can't most days.
And I mean, you could, but I just don't think they are inclined to do that.
Cedric on the season against lefties, a 506 OPS. Colton Cowser on the season against lefties, a 662. Now, it's worth mentioning when talking about Cedric Mullins, where first couple months of the season were rough for Cedric. But from June 12th on, and this is an 87-game sample size here, he had an 834 OPS to go along with the sound defense.
I mean, I'm old enough to remember him having a 30-30 season as a leadoff guy, but I guess, you know, just run Gunnar Henderson into the ground as your leadoff guy. I mean, why would you want to try that when you could take your best player and bat him leadoff and watch him grind
down? That's
the
another oddity, isn't it? That like we thought we knew going into the offseason, you'd want to improve the leadoff spot so you could have Gunnar as more of a run production guy, and yet here we are.
No, you've lost coverage for Gunnar.
Yes.
By letting Santander and everyday bat go, and you've replaced him with a bunch of guys that you only want to play, you know, 40% to 65% of the time.
Well,
but that's what they've built, and that's clearly what they believe in, and they think that they can manage it so well, and they're so smart that they'll have the optimum lineup every day to make this work. I would say I'd rather have guys that it hurts to take out of the lineup. That's just me. But those guys cost money.
That's the issue. You're looking at the staples, guys that you're sharpieing in a heck of a lot more often than not. It's Gunnar, it's Adley because he switch hits, and Westberg.
Let's just take big picture here, though. Like, good teams don't have a lot of platoons. They have everyday players. Even those great Oriole teams, the vintage, like the 79 Orioles had Reneke and Lowenstein in left field. But they had everyday horses. They're like, you don't win with a lineup of platoon guys.
Bill Ripken.
Well, you might win in the regular season against bad pitching, but you don't win in the playoffs.
No. Bill Ripken was saying that on our show for years now at that point, where I think his term is he wants mules, guys that can go out there every single day.
Bill's a mule.
That's true.
Yeah, and look, the reality for this outfield is this is it for Cedric Mullins. He'll leave for a comp, I guess a comp pick. I don't know. Or will there be a qualifying? I don't even know. I don't know. See.
Depends what he does.
Yeah. I mean,
if this year looks like the 80 games, maybe a qualifying.
Well, he's not signing an extension here.
No, I
so
know
they
that.
Either put a qualifying offer on him and he goes and signs somewhere else, or he just leaves unencumbered.
I mean, his numbers will decide whether or not they think he's worth the qualifying offer, is what I'm saying.
And we'll see about Enrique Bradfield Jr. He'll start the year in Double A. We'll see how his hit tool develops. We'll see what Dylan Beavers does at Triple A. And we'll see if they whittle this out at all. But I don't think they're going to.
This is more looking long term, but where are you on Beavers heading into this year? Because I think we thought that he was going to take a bigger jump than he did last year.
I'm going to, like, they're, what do I think? I think they're cowards, is what I think. I think they've drafted a whole bunch of guys who look like Beavers, and one of them might stick. Most of them won't. And they won't turn these guys into much of anything before their star starts to dim. That's what I think. I mean, I think the Honeycutt selection is a little bit more toolsed up Beavers. Like, I think they've been looking at this kind of guy, the college outfielder with power but holes in his swing and longer levers and things we think we can fix. Like, they've been doing a lot of it. maybe there'll be a breakthrough with Dylan Beavers. I mean, I didn't like what I saw from Honeycutt at all.
Struck out a wall.
Didn't like what I saw at all. That's a big time project. I think the hit tool with Enrique Bradfield Jr. is a project. Dylan Beavers still skews more project than prospect, even though he's now their number six prospect because it's starting to get whittled out. I think we've seen this drill before.
Coming up next, yesterday we had a discussion about Orioles owner David Rubenstein, the comments he made while he was in Switzerland. We put up a poll about said comments and what the people think, we'll tell you.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Odyssey State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry and get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
Next here on The Fan.
Well, I wish it would be the case that we would have a salary cap in baseball the way other sports do, and maybe eventually we will, but we don't have that now. So what we have is a luxury tax in effect. So if you go over and higher payroll, with a higher payroll, you have to pay a penalty in effect or something that goes to the other teams. It's not a perfect system. It's better than nothing. But at some point, I suspect we'll probably have something closer to what the NFL and the NBA have, but there's no guarantee of that.
Well, he's hoping against hope. I guess in that collective bargaining agreement, there might be some owners that advocate for just a complete nuclear winter to try to get the players to bend. But man, oh man, I think that's a tough one. But that's David Rubenstein, owner of the Orioles. And remember, months ago, he was talking about winning a World Series. Now he's talking about a salary cap. We did put a poll up about these comments and the change in tune and bone for the polls.
We do, and it's brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. It is Wing Tuesday. Buy one, get one half off traditional wings. Happy hours going on now through 6, 3 to 6, Monday through Friday. If you can't stop in, order Buffalo Wild Wings Go and pick it up on your way home or for your next event. This poll is final, but IA 105.7 The Fan is how you can find us. We're weeks away from pitchers and catchers. Orioles signed no free agents in a multi-year deal, and front office yet to extend homegrown players. New owners already whining about lack of a salary cap in MLB's economic system. What do you think, Birdland? About 500 votes. Big deal, 63.2%. Little deal, 23.4%. And no deal, 13.3%.
Glad to see over 60% of the people see it as a big deal. Like they're used to, maybe there's some, there was a period of time, Jason, where it didn't matter what was coming out of the warehouse. It was trust in what they're doing. And I think that is, that corner has, it's, that's not happening anymore.
Well, I mean,
I think people are getting antsy.
He doesn't sound like he cares. I mean, there's the clip of him. Well, I think we're pretty good. I mean, most people think we've got an okay roster. I mean, like they've done the bare minimum. They've checked boxes. They have tried to prevent the floor from totally crumbling, but they've done nothing to put any ladders down to help people climb to a higher ceiling.
You mentioned him talking about the state of the team. Here is David Rubenstein to Yahoo Finance talking about that.
I think the team's in pretty good shape. Clearly, we have some free agents we've gotten now on the team. There's some people that have been with us, may not be with us in the future. But I think the team is in pretty good shape. We'll start spring training in a month.
Pretty good shape. That'll fire you up. Put that on a bumper sticker. We're in pretty good shape.
I mean, is that hey, we did everything we could to try to improve this team? I mean, is that, hey, we saw 10,000 people not buy us, literally not buy our baseball team in the playoffs, and we responded with a renewed vigor and urgency? No, they lowered beer and they brought in a bunch of marketing types. They got together and decided to lower some beer prices. They're figuring out how to spend all the money that they're getting to refurbish their stadium.
Yeah.
And they did the bare minimum, barely, as a front office in the offseason. And none of his commitments are real beyond this year. And it still takes the payroll to a level that it was 6, 7, 8 years ago.
2017. That was the last
time I was
there.
I don't know that he could even feign overt excitement about the team that they built, unless you just want to believe that they've done nothing but hit home runs in the draft and it's all going to come together and just you wait and see.
But aren't you shocked the guy that threw hats around wasn't going to tell you how excited he was?
Did he sound excited to you then?
No, but I'm saying, you say he wasn't fanning. So this is the guy that's out there cheerleading, throwing hats.
He'll be doing that again.
Yeah, I thought I'd hear a guy that was fired up for the season.
Look, they are doing things in large part the Angelos way. They've kept Angelos people in that building, and those people are seemingly trying to keep costs down, spend as little as they can, and that's how they justify their existence. Morale is low. Toxicity is high. People don't believe in baseball operations, and they don't believe in that warehouse that this owner has a clue yet as to what he inherited, how bad it is, where they need help, and how much time they're pissing away by just letting Mike Elias and Jennifer Grandal and these people chart the course for how your team is messaged and how your team is put together. Masson is gutted. Producer's gone. I mean, it's nothing going on there. If you thought the product was rough before, you ain't seen nothing yet. People are flabbergasted as to what's transpired there. The people who got paid, the people who didn't, the people who got promotions, the people who are being let go. The lengths they're going to save a dollar here and 50 cents there, it's left people baffled that a guy who bought the Magna Carta is letting this happen. Do I think he even is aware of most of it? I don't. And by the time he figures it out, as I've been saying for months, and I was tweeting in June and July, like, I hope this guy gets his hands on the steering wheel soon, because the people who are driving this thing are driving it off a cliff. Like, by the time he does that, it's going to be too late for this iteration of whatever the Gunnar Adley Orioles could have been. Like, everybody sees it over there, except for seemingly Mike Elias and Sig and Evie, and you know, some of their marketing people and some of their VPs. Like, there's nothing they're doing that is engendering faith that they're actually going to capitalize on this opportunity. It's kind of staggering, and this guy could have been a difference maker.
Yeah.
And maybe at some point he will be a difference maker, but he's been hoodwinked. And it's on him ultimately, because he allowed a lot of people to stay in that building who he should have been able to figure out within the first 3 or 4 months were frauds.
I think that's the big shocking part of all of this, is you kind of, how they phrased this when we were there at opening day. And we were at the Rubenstein press conference, and they phrased this transition, the new chapter, the next chapter is what it was, the next chapter. Well, we've kept a lot of the people and a lot of the same stuff from the prior chapter, and you're not really writing your own new story yet. And now we're coming up nearly on a year since the ownership took over at the end of March, and I just thought that there would be more of an investment internally in terms of giving a long-term extension to some of your own guys, bringing in your own people. Masson's
heading for a chapter 11.
Masson has so much potential.
And it doesn't.
You thought that they would if they invested in it, it would. If they reinvested into it, it would with the product. But this new chapter, we're waiting for these new stories that haven't been written yet.
Coming up next, the Orioles did hold a press conference this morning announcing Adam Jones as special advisor to general manager Mike Elias. Andy Koska covered that press conference for the Baltimore Battery. He covers the Orioles. We'll get his thoughts on the offseason. We haven't talked to Andy in a while. He joins us next here on The Fan. We're less than 60 days away from opening day. Pitchers and catchers will be reporting in just a few weeks. I know I saw the Orioles posted that video of the truck starting to head down to Florida. They had a press conference today, officially announcing Adam Jones, the special advisor to the GM. And let's go out to the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline, where Andy Koska joins us. He covers the O's for the Baltimore Banner. And Andy, thank you as always for joining us. We appreciate your time. Let's start with the Adam Jones of it all. What do you make of his role? How involved do you think Adam will be?
Hey guys, well, first off, thanks for having me. For Adam Jones, it's an interesting position. I think, you know, I truly don't believe he'll be, you know, vital in the you know, personnel decisions and things of that nature. I think he is you know, going to be more valuable when it comes to, you know, being in the clubhouse every once in a while, talking to players in the minor leagues, you know, kind of, you know, telling guys about his own experience playing. We'll see exactly if it helps at all attract Japanese players. That he kind of played up that angle in the press conference today. He played two seasons before he retired in Japan. Seems to have loved it. But at the same time, it's an East Coast club, so it's not maybe the expected landing spot for some of the large Japanese stars. Who are, you know, going to be posted at some point, and have already been posted in the previous years. So it's a, you know, as Mike Elias said, it's a way to bridge the gap between the last couple teams, Orioles teams that were really consistently competing in the AL East, to this current crop. And he feels like Adam Jones is no better. There's no better player than Adam Jones to be that representative for that group.
Well, Andy, pitchers and catchers report, that's rapidly approaching in a couple weeks at Sarasota. Looking at this offseason as a whole, and there's still time, even though February is this weekend, but looking at this offseason as a whole, has it met your expectations of what you thought would transpire thus far? Had they done enough?
I will be able to give you a better answer in October.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think this team is capable of winning 90 games. You know, with the group they have, I don't think they needed to make many upgrades to do that. They have starting pitching depth, even if they don't have the ace like Corbin Burns like they had last season. They have a better bullpen, I believe, this year with, you know, adding Andrew Kittredge and having Felix Bautista back, as long as Bautista is healthy and pitching as well as we know he can. The bullpen looks great. And you imagine that, you know, some of these players will only get better or find some semblance of consistency. You know, Adley Rutschman had a difficult second half, to say the least. That's not like him. He probably is going to find more rhythm. Players like Heston Kerstad, Cobie Mayo, Jackson Holliday, you expect, you know, as they get more major league time, they're going to improve. So I do think this team is a playoff team. They are built for that. The real question, and I think really the only one that will matter for this team going forward, is can they do it in the postseason? Because they haven't so far, obviously. Do they need an ace to do it in the postseason? Well, they had one last year, and the offense did not support a phenomenal Corbin Burns outing. So it's really kind of a crapshoot, maybe a little bit in October. To answer your actual question, I think maybe it would have been a little bit more promising had Baltimore added a, you know, ace kind of guy, or at least a top of rotation arm. But I'm not willing to, as of yet, put the final note on this offseason. If you remember, on February 1st, they traded for Corbin Burns. So this is it's not done yet. Mike Elias likes to kind of wait and see how the market develops, and for, you know, for the trade market especially, as teams get closer to spring training, they're going to be more willing to do a deal. They will feel more pressure to get a deal done because they don't necessarily want to go into spring and then rip apart a clubhouse before the season even begins. So they want to make that deal before players report. We'll see if something happens. definitely a possibility. Be it Castillo in from Seattle or Dylan Cease from San Diego, just to name two. But there are options out there, and I wouldn't put it past the O's to make some late noise.
Based on the roster construction as we know it right now, what's available to them right now, and so like 90, 93, 94 wins would and pushing the Yankees for the division, I think, right, would probably be the high end of the swath of potential outcomes we would look at. What about what would be the low end for you? 80 to 83 and fighting for the final wild card spot?
I'd be pretty shocked if this team was not multiple games over 500, just because of the depth this lineup has. I like the AAA depth. Think about signing Dylan Carlson. I know fans, can gloss over signings such as those, but that is what helps the team win 90 games. Is to just to focus on Carlson for 1 second. It's a guy that has hit against left-handed pitching well in his career. Can play all three outfield spots. He has options. Mm-hmm. Most likely, will start the season in AAA. At some point, Tyler O'Neill has a history of landing on the injured list.
Yes.
He feels he can avoid it, but the history shows that he has not played more than 113 games in 3 or 4 years. So you expect that, hey, at some point they're going to need to call up Dylan Carlson to hit against left-handed pitching, because it's a left-handed heavy outfield in terms of batting. Mm-hmm. So they need somebody to hit, from the right side of the plate. I think that's a phenomenal addition. Low risk, probably not high reward, but you can win a couple games, sneaking through when you have a major acquisition injured like O'Neill. And obviously I'm talking about someone who's not even injured yet. He hasn't played a game.
Well, but it's kind of baked into the cake.
You hope that doesn't even happen. But it's moves like that I think they've done a good job to make sure that the floor is relatively high here. And so I'd be shocked if they were a 500 team fighting for that last wild card spot. I think they're more realistically going to be maybe 5-6 games above 500, pushing into the 90 plus win territory. But I mean, last year I was way off. I think I was on your show maybe, and I predicted, I forget whose show I was on, but I predicted, I think, 92 wins or something like that, and I forget what they ended up with. But it's impossible to know here in January. But I think that the ceiling is maybe not as high as you felt it was last year with the Corbin Burnes type. But I also think the floor is really, it's pretty high, because I like the depth they have at pitching, and you feel like the lineup can improve compared to some of the slumps they went through last year.
We're talking with Andy Koskets, Inside Access here on the Fan. Let's go to the lineup. And this lineup, for the most part, was in a team-wide funk the second half of the season. They did not hit unless they hit home runs. With all that being said, and I know there are some guys with some pedigree and some potential here, but were you surprised they didn't go and get a more legit everyday bat? Tyler O'Neill had a fine year with the Red Sox, but he's a guy, as you pointed out, gets hurt. Also, he's much better hitting lefties more than righties. So, were you surprised they didn't go and get a legit everyday bat? And is the lineup as good as it was a year ago with Santander gone?
It's a tough question, and I'm going to dance around it in a way that Mike Elias would be proud with some of the wordplay here. But I think the lineup is maybe as good, potentially a little bit worse. But you got it rid of a guy in Santander who had 44 homers, but part of the home run dependency of this team was because of Santander. I mean, he was a phenomenal player, incredibly important in that clubhouse. Had a lot of RBIs, 102 RBIs. But you're also talking about a guy that, his on base percentage was .308. So he was pretty boom or bust. You're substituting that, and you expect Kowser to replicate what he did, if not, do a tiny bit better. You expect Mullins to replicate what he did, which wasn't great, but was strong defense. And you expect O'Neill to absolutely crush left-handed pitching and do good enough against righties and have Heston Kjerstad in the mix. And I really think Kjerstad could be a valuable piece. He's not a traditional fourth outfielder, but you have flexibility because Kowser, O'Neill, Mateo, they can all play center field if you need to rotate Mullins. I think in that aspect, just looking at the outfield, I feel pretty good about the outfield, even without Santander. You're losing some home runs, but I think you're adding, you know, of course, Heston has a lot of power, but think about this 2-week stretch he had when he got up in June. So mid-June to July, before he was hit in the head by Clay Holmes fastball, and his season kind of was off track because of the concussion. He hit, in 14 games, he had a 1,141 OPS. Just unbelievable. And he only had, you know, an OPS that high. He only had 3 home runs. You know, so it wasn't like every single ball was just leaving the yard. He was finding gaps, a lot of singles, a lot of hits overall, RBIs up the yin yang. You know, that was a really, really promising 2-week stretch. And anybody in baseball can have a good two-week stretch. We've seen it a million times. But you feel like guys like that will take the next step. And I feel like Baltimore is very bullish about their farm system, how these guys can transition to the major leagues. I don't think Jackson Holliday is going to struggle the way he did last year. I think he's going to arrive and look more like the player he was at the very end of the year. If you remember his last week, and again, these are tiny sample sizes I'm talking about. So it's not, you know, I wouldn't be shocked. Maybe there will be, you know, a slump. Maybe the lineup isn't as good. And we'll be talking in October about how they needed to sign that big piece. They needed to re-sign Anthony Santander, whoever it is. But I think Baltimore believes in its player development system, and they're going to put trust into Jackson Holliday, Heston Kjerstad, Cole Mayo, Jordan Westberg, all those young guys taking those next steps. Honestly, Gunnar Henderson's kind of, you know exactly what he's going to do, even though he's 23. You put trust in all those guys to become even more productive than they were last year. And for a lot of them, they weren't productive at all. I mean, Mayo and Jackson Holliday were really unproductive. You know, they seemed lost at the plate. But I don't think they'll be lost for very long. So that's a long way of saying you could be absolutely right. They should have gone out and got they probably could have done that. They could have absolutely done that. But I think I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt in that they have a lot of really good prospects. And, you know, obviously some of them have graduated prospect status on the list, but young players overall who I feel can take that next step. And so we'll see if it all comes together. This is the fun part, though. We get to speculate, and you know, we'll talk later in the season and see if they were correct that these players did take the next step. And if they didn't, then there's bigger questions on, you know, why does the best farm system in baseball not translate to the major leagues? That's the next big question. If they don't.
And as guys graduate, they're no longer the best farm system in baseball.
Exactly, correct.
Hey,
is letting guys three-peat AAA really in anybody's best interest?
Andy, always great, man. Thank you so much for your time. Baseball will be here before we know it, and we look forward to talking to you again.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Andy Koska covers the O's for the Baltimore Banner. Hey, coming up next.
I mean, I love Norfolk as much as the next guy.
Yeah, you like it more than most.
I don't think you need 3 summers there.
Yeah, no. Good beaches, right? It's okay.
I wouldn't say that.
Hey, coming up next, I'll tell you what was great. The debut of Bonework yesterday, and we will pay off our Bonework poll. What movie will Bone have to watch? Because he don't know any movies. That's next here on The Fan. Yesterday was the debut of Bonework, and man, the interwebs were buzzing.
Really?
Took
Baltimore by storm?
People were very excited.
I'll take your word for bartenders asking you about it.
A lot of people in my
wedding planner saying, hey, are you the guy who's having the Bonework wedding?
Well, here's the thing. X Factors are gone until September.
That's right. So, we had to fill the void, Bum.
Yeah, you got to fill the void.
See, he's on Monkey Business?
Yeah.
Not going to be around for a while.
Yeah.
No.
But it's back.
It is back.
Back.
We thought it was done.
Thank God.
Yeah.
We thought it was done.
But people are interested.
Why would you want Monk when you can have Liam Cohen?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Duvall. By the way, people were enamored and amazed at what Bone doesn't know. And so they look forward to this.
I know nothing.
I hope.
Yeah. No, people are excited.
So what will you be watching this weekend?
Let's set it up. So yesterday we proposed, and it was weird because Jason and I did not talk about this ahead of time.
That is crazy.
I think it was because we knew you watched the Godfather movies.
Yes.
So we all, and obviously De Niro was in Godfather 2, which you had watched most recently. So we both chose two De Niro films, and we put it to the people.
Yes, we did. We're trying to edify young Tim Barbalace, a.k.a. T-Bone, a.k.a. The Bone, two AKAs, and help fill in some of the many gaps in his game. We're starting with movies. Which of these should he watch and report back to us on? And yeah, these is a vibe to these, but we didn't plan it that way.
I liked it that way. We're simpatico hacks, so like, of course.
True facts.
Yeah.
It was a runaway. I thought it was going to be. Goodfellas, 73.8%.
That is... egregiously high.
Casino,
considering the quality of all these films.
Casino, 14.1.
Recency bias.
Taxi Driver,
6.6.
Taxi Driver, 6.6.
That's more than the 70s.
I know, but still, it's far from recent.
Raging Bull, 5.6. Yeah, I think Goodfellas was 90 and Casino was 95. Yeah.
So,
Let me just say this. They're all great movies. I've seen all four of them. Goodfellas is
best of the bunch?
It's my favorite movie of all time.
Well,
so, yes.
And it is the best of the bunch. Is it the best of the bunch for you?
No.
What's the top of that?
If I had to rank those movies.
Yes, rank them.
I would go Taxi Driver, Raging Bull,
those are
Goodfellas,
both his
choices. Casino.
It's odd how that worked.
Yeah, that was interesting. Okay.
Yeah,
so. Well, I'm excited to see Goodfellas.
So when will you be watching?
I'm thinking maybe...
Because you get the weekend.
Yeah, you got maybe after volleyball, when you're coming down off that endorphin high that is volleyball.
Sunday, there's no football going on.
That's true.
I might just watch
Pro Bowl.
Sunday. That way
Pro Bowl.
I don't care about the Pro Bowl. I don't care.
So what are we going to do next? Albums? Next week, we'll do albums?
We could.
Why don't we workshop it during the segment? I think we should change it up each week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Maybe, no, maybe we have albums. To keep moving around. I think albums next.
I'm willing to bet that our musical choices will be more varied than our movie choices.
So how do you want me to bring this back? Is this like a book report type thing?
Yeah,
you
grade it.
We give it
one to five bones. One to ten bones or one to five bones?
Give you my feelings on it? Okay.
Yeah, what you liked, what you didn't like.
Okay, I will take notes during the movie.
Interesting.
I mean, I don't know if you need to go to that level. But whatever you think. Run it through the bone simulator. Whatever. Yeah, but you come back and you rate it. You give us a rating. One out of five bones.
Do you think Goodfellas is better than The Godfather?
No.
I mean, you do. You think it's your favorite.
I think Godfather 2 is better than The Godfather. So, but that's just me.
I'm excited to see it. I
don't
heard
think
this
Goodfellas is made without The Godfather.
That's fine. It's still you can improve upon it.
Okay.
Like Spaceballs isn't made without Star Wars.
That's a good point. That is a good name.
I would say Spaceballs isn't made without Airplane. Yeah, well, it's probably where true. I would go with that.
But Spaceballs was a spoof of.
But you could spoof a lot of.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
I think he's right.
I'd rather watch Spaceballs than any Star Wars movie, and it's not even close.
Jeez.
It's not even close.
I do like both, but that's just
Spaceballs
me.
Is a great movie.
They're making a Spaceballs too.
Spaceballs.
By the way, I'm shocked that you've seen Spaceballs. How did that come about?
I don't know.
This do you know that Spaceballs 2 is in production?
Starring
Josh Gad, yes. Mel Brooks is producing.
Also,
he's still alive.
In a completely different direction, Happy Gilmore 2?
Yes,
how
it'll be out this summer.
Happen?
It's already been made.
Yeah. How long ago was that? It was in the 90s?
Yes. Hey, you'll watch it, Bob.
I will. I enjoyed Happy Gilmore.
Okay. I'd rather see Happy Gilmore 2 than somebody remake another movie and do it like crappy.
Mm. But, dude, this is a total cash grab.
So is remaking a movie that just came out 20 or 30 years ago.
If it makes you laugh for 90 minutes, who cares if it's a cash grab?
Is it going to live up to one?
Well,
probably not. It's a sequel. It's,
yes.
Yeah.
Usually not. Hey, coming up next, will Chiefs Eagles, too, live up to the original Super Bowl. It's a week from Sunday. Evan Washburn was on the sidelines for Chiefs and who they play? The Bills in the AFC Championship game. He also is heavily involved with Ravens Productions. He joins us next here on The Fan.